Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 83, Prioritizing Things in a Virtual World. Here we go. Today my guest is Lauren Malhoit. And Lauren, did I say that right? Malhoit?
Yep, that's right.
Oh, because it's like I know you as Lauren, I just go Lauren, but I've never actually said the last name. How you doing, Lauren?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm about 5 out of 6. I'm going to take that for a Thursday.
That's not too bad. Thanks for having me, Rick. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. My show is only as good as the guests, so trust me, they don't come here for me. So, Lauren, you and I kind of got to know each other recently, but for the listeners out there who might not know yet, you know, take a chance, introduce yourself and what you do professionally and maybe some of the extracurricular blog podcast type stuff that you do.
Sure. Right now I work for VMware EMC partner, and I do a lot of virtualization. I'm post sales for our company, so you know, just a lot of implementation and hopefully some best practices and things like that. A lot of VMware in my life, and I love it. And then I also write blogs for Tech Republic. Which is kind of how you and I don't know if that's how we met really, well, at least our online meeting, but we kind of share that, and I also host a new podcast called Adapting IT, where I interview women in and around tech, but the content's technical, it's just really trying to get some good people on and get information out there.
Outstanding. Yeah, Tech Republic's a great site. I really like it. I've been there for a number of years, and it's one of my passions. And, Lauren, you can be found on Twitter, at Malhoit, and I'll put links to that in the podcast notes. And the new audio podcast is www.adaptingit.com, and it looks like it's in the iTunes library, as well as there's an RSS feed, so it's pretty much everything you need.
Yep, that's what I figure.
Outstanding, outstanding. So, Lauren, I keep it nice and quick and short here on the podcast. You know, I like to take a topic that we all deal with, prioritizing things, right? And my goal is to just kind of come up with some popcorn ideas and things that we've done so that everybody can walk away and learn a little bit. So one of the things that I always deal with, and, you know, I play in the software space, so I don't always get a chance to influence the bigger picture, which, you know, you do, right? Because you work with a lot more components involved. But how do you make everybody happy? Everybody wants low cost, high performance, and they like virtualization, and they want huge capacity, you know, on storage resources, and they don't want a lot of space. You know, what are some of the – I've always kind of told people that you can't have it all, right? You know, how do you go about those type of conversations where people truly want it all, but – you know, when one of the things that they want is low cost, how do you level set it? How do you kind of bring it back?
Well, you know, I mean, there's also the time factor too. People want it done yesterday. And so you know, it's kind of, have you ever seen that triangle where one side's low cost, one side is, you know, best performance, and the other side is, of course, now I'm blanking on what the other side is.
Well, it could be anything, capacity.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But you can only have two of those things ever, you know? Oh. You can't have it done yesterday and have low cost and have best performance.
Gotcha.
So I think, you know, you really have to figure out what, like in my case, what a customer wants. Is it important that it gets done this month, or is it more important that we really nail down, you know, the design and figure out the most inexpensive way to do it? So I think that's kind of the first thing, is just figuring out, gathering requirements.
Yeah, discovery is the most underrated aspect of IT in general, I really think, right? The worst thing you can do is go gung-ho, jump in, throw something in, and find out it's already been done.
Right? Yeah, and just because two people want the same thing doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the same solution, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think I know what you're talking about with that triangle. I used to work with a lot of project managers, and they used to always beat into my head cost, schedule, performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's...
You know? And you got to really revolve around those, and that's what they rolled in. And it's always the discovery from a technical sense is probably also supplemented by, with a discovery on the people sense. I think that's fair to say, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you have two engineers or a customer and you know, partner or whomever, a vendor, whatever, speaking together, the customer may not be speaking the same language necessarily. So you might get in and think that you're doing one thing, and then you actually get in their environment and you're like, oh, that's not what it looks like at all.
It's not what you told me it was, yeah. Well, do you have any, like, good examples, like a horror story of something not what you thought it was? Because those are always really good stories.
I don't know if I have specific examples, but, you know, people are on, you know, like VMware View or something. People will tell you that they're on one of the most recent versions, but they don't realize that View 4.0 is a whole different animal, a whole different beast than, you know, View 5.1, or even 5.0, or even 4.6. So, you know, it's one of those things where, okay, this is going to take, you know, we have to do several upgrades in this case. And by the way, it's going to look completely different to your end users. So, you know, something like that, or you walk in and they didn't let you know that they have 10 gig Ethernet instead of 1 gig, you know. It's not always a huge deal. It's not like it's a showstopper. It's just, you know, the time allotment, you know, that to me is kind of the biggest, not pain, but kind of the biggest concern or obstacle, just because, you know, you have 3 days with one customer and then you have the other two already scheduled out, but yeah. If
it's
you
an
don't
unknown,
schedule
right.
that right.
You can't control it, you know, the dynamic, something always comes up, right?
Exactly.
You know, nothing ever sticks to the plan. And back to that View example, I could totally, tell me if I'm right, I'm perceiving into the situation a little mm-hmm. bit. Was it one of those things that they had the latest and greatest View client, but not the latest and greatest View infrastructure?
No, and oh, actually... Okay. What's interesting is I had totally forgot this. You know, 4.0 was, what, 3-4 years ago, something like that.
Sure.
And I had just totally forgotten that it had a web client kind of aspect to it, which got dropped in 4.6. And, you know, the customer was using the web client and not just the, you know, the View fat client that we're all kind of used to, which will change, I guess, in View 5.2. That just... information just came out, but yeah, so it was kind of like, oh geez, you know, yeah, no, you're not going to have that anymore.
yeah. And you know, that's one thing you have to know, right? VMware, mm-hmm. Hyper-V, any virtualization technology for that matter, it's going to change on you. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to change from the VMwares and from the Microsofts, and you know, you're going to have to go with it, right? Because this is a very fast moving segment of technology, you know, for a lot of reasons. Competitive, new features are just, mm-hmm. you know, turned up every day. So, I think we're at a point right now where there are a lot of people, in my personal opinion, who are really doing their virtualization practice materially unchanged since like 2006. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you see people like that, right? They live and die from the vSphere client, and that's
yeah.
all they do.
And it works, and you know, are you saying, you know, they just kind of implemented it and now they're just using virtualization?
Yeah, they've used virtualization, mm-hmm. right? The data center looks pretty good. It's mostly virtualized, but mm-hmm. they haven't gone down the VMware View route, right? They haven't gone mm-hmm. down the vCloud Director route.
Okay, yeah, they're not like expanding their...
Yeah, it's the same thing they've done for the last 6 years, which is a long time.
Yeah, it is. Well, and especially if they're sticking on kind of the same major releases, even, you know, like, I just, the topic being prioritization, you know, I think upgrades should be a major priority, because if you fall far behind, you know, you're kind of out of luck a few years later. You kind of have to almost redo things again.
Well, that's a good point, because I had done a webinar on, what I call New Year's resolutions for VMware admins. And actually, I put a very specific VMware-related upgrade point in there. And that was upgrade more than just vSphere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's also virtual machine hardware and VMware tools, right? And VMware has a really good mechanism, right? That's Update Manager. Really helps mm-hmm. you for that. But then also, little things, storage firmware, HBA firmware, server BIOS, right? Those things need updating too. And you never underestimate the value of a firmware image. Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. I would definitely test first, at least.
Oh, ooh, touche! I love it. Awesome. So,
or cross my fingers really hard.
Yeah. or actually, just heard from someone else that rev is okay. How about that?
Right. There you go. A little research.
Yeah. It's funny because speaking of research, I've been running up with a lot of work this week. Next week is VMware Partner Exchange. We're recording here on Thursday, the 21st. And Lauren, you're going to be at Partner Exchange. So, this will go live that week. So if you're at VMware Partner Exchange, stop by the Veeam booth. I'll be there, about half the time. I'm splitting it with Hans de Lin here. I can't quite pronounce his name right. I might have to remove my tongue and insert a diving board to get it right. But anyways, that was a bad analogy. Good thing I record and post edit. Anyways, so Lauren, we were talking about PEX, and you know, you have a really interesting story, and if you're comfortable to talk about it. So you said you were taking the train to PEX, and I was like, wow, because you're based in Indianapolis, and we're actually doing this call. You're in Chicago right now. So,
yep, on my friend's couch right now.
So tell me the story as much as you're comfortable. I'm very interested, right? If people who know me know that there's three things that I know and I'm passionate about. Number one is computers. Number two is food. And number three is airplanes. So tell me your story about why you're taking the train to PEX.
Sure, I'm happy to. Actually, when I was 14, I was in a plane crash. It was my dad and I were in the plane. We're both alive and okay today. But we were in a small four-seater plane, dual engine, a Viking, if you know anything. It was like a 1973 Viking. The length of the plane is just a little longer than the length of me. So we went up in Toledo, which is my hometown, and we were taking it to Wauseon, Ohio, which is where the plane was usually stored. It was being repaired in Toledo. And went in for a landing in Wauseon and had to go back up. And, you know, either the wind coming over the treetops or something happened that made us kind of lose control. And from about 100 feet up, we took a nosedive. So behind us in another plane was the manager of the airport, Shane Williams, and he had a student. He was giving a lesson, and they made an emergency landing and saw that we were already down. Our plane was on fire, and I couldn't get out because my leg was stuck under the engine. So Shane made an emergency landing, literally jumped out of the plane as it was taxiing and like ducked under a wing. And then came over and kind of lifted the plane up, you know, cause those planes are all fabric and, you know, a little bit of framework for the metal, but, lifted the plane up and pulled me out and, you know, dragged me a few yards away and then went back for my dad who, you know, he's probably 6'1" and I won't say his weight. He might not like that, but, but he's not, you know, a tiny man by any means. And, had to knock out a window because the flames had already been licking up the passenger side door where I was. And so he knocked out a window and pulled my dad out. And while he was kind of, you know, dragging him back, the plane exploded. Either, you know, an oxygen tank or the fuel tank caught fire and finally just went. So, we would have been out of luck for sure if Shane had not been there.
Wow.
And he actually won. We nominated him for the Carnegie Foundation. It's like a hero award and he won that. And yeah, we got two different helicopters back to Toledo to a hospital there. And I spent a couple months there with, some burns and broken leg and broken hand and other such things. And, my dad had a broken arm and yeah, so I have been in a plane since, 7 times actually, but as you can see, I'm like counting it in my head.
Well, you're on the, and you know what? That's great. I mean, it's great that you both made it, right? I mean, I fly a lot, you know, and I do think about what could go wrong. And actually, that kind of follows what I think about in the workplace, right? What could go wrong, right? Because I'm in the backup business. But I, you know, we talked about this the other day on the phone, and I was just, I had to hear the story, and, you know, I'm glad that you shared it with us, but I'm more glad that you both were, you know, you both came out of that, but wow.
Too bad there's no, like, HA.
Well, you know, I always have a backup, right? If Wikipedia serves me well, that's a single engine aircraft, right?
I thought it was dual, but I have no idea, honestly.
Sure.
It could be. I don't remember.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of times, you know, it's just, you know, things can happen, right? Mm-hmm. You see commercial aircraft, of course, having issues also. But I totally understand if you've gone through something like that to not fly. So, you know, you're in technology, right? So VMware PEX, for example, you're taking the train from Chicago mm-hmm. to Vegas. Actually, I think that would be very interesting to do, honestly. So you've taken the train, I take it, before in long distances, right? How's that from a travel perspective?
Yeah, I actually went to VMworld via train. So that was, I think, a 50-hour train ride, whereas this one will be about 35. And it's, you know, on the way there, it's actually awesome. And I kind of look forward to having those 2 days to, I mean, there's just so much. Speaking of prioritization, you know, just so many things that you kind of put off because you're in action. But when you're on the train, there's nothing you can do. You just sit there and you have to, like, write your blogs or, you know, plan whatever or get organized. And it's kind of awesome to be able to do that.
Do they provide... I know some of the trains, and I guess maybe also depending on where they are, provide internet access, right?
Ones that I have been on haven't, but, you know, usually I have it on a hotspot on my phone, so I can, like, kind of tether or whatever.
Right.
There are, like, if you're in California, like, some of those that just go up and down the coast do.
Sure.
But, yeah, the cross-country ones so far have not.
Gotcha. So, yeah, I would be in the bring-your-own-internet category myself.
Mm-hmm. And download a ton of TV shows and movies.
Sure. And a lot of people might just think, well, how's that different than being on a plane minus connectivity? Well,
right.
For one, I bet you have more personal space.
You do. Well, and I usually get, like, a little, they call them roomettes, you know, so I have a bed
uh-huh.
and, you know, my door shuts and things like that. So, I can take conference calls and all sorts of things as long as there's cell phone reception, which really isn't a problem anymore.
I got to try this. I really do. I'm serious because I am so tired sometimes of just prioritizing everything, and I'm guilty of always trying to do it all. That's my biggest flaw.
Mm-hmm.
I never say no, right? I want to do it all. I sometimes kind of reality check myself and I say, look, Rick, you can do anything, but you can't do it all, okay? But I'd love to just kind of slow my life down a little bit. And maybe I'll do that sometime. Just, you know, because how it might, in a way, be much like working from home. Right.
It is. And, you know, I think you might like it. Like, you make reservations to go to the dining car and you sit with people and chat and they're from all over. Yeah. I'm shocked at how many Europeans are on the trains. You know, I'm like, are you not aware of how large America is? Like, I know it's a little different over there.
Yeah.
But
well, that's awesome. And then, you know, do you ever get it? Do you treat it like airfare? So you expense it? You know?
Yep. And I'm lucky that my company pays for it. Cause, you know, it obviously takes a little longer and it's more expensive than a plane ride too.
Sure.
Well, it's more expensive if you get the little room app.
Gotcha. Understood. Well, I'm very, you know, interested in all of that. I'm looking at Amtrak right now. But
the only problem is they don't have a direct to Vegas, so I do have to get on a bus for a couple hours at the end.
Oh,
but,
bummer.
Yeah.
Well, look at that. Well, the room at, yeah, that would be expensive, yeah. So, yeah. But you know what? I think I go back and forth, man. I got to try that. I got to try it sometime. That sounds.
And you should do it at least once. You know, I'm not suggesting that it's for everyone every single time they travel, but you know, I think it's fun and it's kind of, you know, a distinguished way of traveling,
right,
I guess.
Right. And you know, I love it. I should try that. But you know, I always again try to do it all, so I get schedule crunched. Like, last night, I drove back from Evansville, Indiana, very late. I didn't get home till like 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I'm always trying to do it all, so I had stuff to do this morning here, so understood. Well, anyways, hey, Lauren, like I said, I keep it nice and short here on my podcast.
Sure.
Great topic. Thanks for being on. Have a great trip out to Nevada, and we will see you next week at PEX. Again, Lauren's website is adaptingit.com. It's her Tech Female Awesome Audio Podcast. She's on Twitter at Malhoit, and also blogs at techrepublic.com, as do I. Good stuff. All right, Lauren, thanks again for being on.
Thanks for having me, and I'll see you next week.